I want to welcome our speaker from West Los Angeles, Sia.
I'm Sia. I'm an alcoholic. Sounds like you hear me okay, right? Good. That was so sweet of you, Tom. You gave me a book in case I need some help. I want to thank you all for having me here. I want to thank Barb and Chris for their hospitality. This is a beautiful facility. Last time I was here, you were in St. Patrick's Church. A great meeting is a great meeting, but this is lovely, and I'm delighted to be here tonight. I guess I consider Barb and Chris friends, but you know, if you're new here tonight, the real cement between us is these are people that I see toiling in the rows and the fields of AA, trying to carry the message. They're sober people, and that means a great deal to me. I need you. I need to be able to find you. I have 23 years of sobriety date. My sobriety date is January 30th, 1983, and I still need meetings. We were talking before the meeting, and what I said to them is true for me. I don't know if it's true for you, and if you're new, you're just going to have to find this out or not, but I have to go to meetings, or I get sick. I get really sick, and you notice it also. Many people do, and I have to go to AA, and it's not a problem for me. I have come to love Alcoholics Anonymous, value Alcoholics Anonymous. I do things like this because I'm asked. It makes me nervous. But the thing about it is that something wonderful happened for me. And if you're new here, I hope you find what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of things that I've been given here. It's amazing to be invited to do this simply because I got something to say about not having to take a drink today. And if taking a drink is a problem for you, if the drink takes you someplace you don't want to be, or if the drink takes a drink, there's a lot of different ways of saying if you have a drinking problem, maybe you're an alcoholic like me, and maybe Alcoholics Anonymous has an answer for you. Alcoholics Anonymous is an interesting organization. It's tailor-made for somebody like me. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't diagnose. It's up to me to say I'm an alcoholic. Diagnosis is a passive thing. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to make that decision, but you see, this is a program of action. Identification is the most important action I can take in Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I identify that I have this disease, which is fatal, progressive, and incurable, it's medically incurable alcoholism, but it's only seemingly hopeless. That's what our literature says. So if you're new here tonight and you feel hopeless, you're wrong. You're wrong. And I can say that based on my experience. I count on it. I stake my life on it every day. Alcoholics Anonymous works. And so I try to stay in touch with people. I feel very comfortable talking to other alcoholics. I need to do it. I need that action of identification. Not drinking is not an action I can take. You know, I have to do these things here that we do so I don't drink. And I tried other things. And maybe you're uncomfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I was new. And I know how that feels. I remember sitting on my hands. You know, I was scared. There's a lot of people here tonight. If you're not drinking, it can seem like millions. That's how it felt to me, you know. And sat on my hands and got desperate enough to pray to a God I was afraid of. I didn't really know what was going on, and I felt terrible, thought my life was over. And after I was here for a little while, I started feeling better. I started judging the speakers. So if you're new here tonight and you judge the speaker, I want to be the first person to say, I'm glad you're feeling better, you know, congratulations. And Alcoholics Anonymous is welcome in the community, very welcome in the community. This church is happy to rent this facility to us, and you can find Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's not a secret organization. It's well-known and published, and the reason for that is because Alcoholics Anonymous helps many, many more people than just the alcoholic. You know, I got my family back. I didn't want my family back, but I got my family back, you know, and people here got their families back, and we were restored to our communities and our positions. Alcoholics Anonymous does this wonderful thing, and so we're welcome as a group wherever we go. You know, as an individual, I don't know, I suppose if this church heard my fourth step, they'd walk us all to the curb right away, see? But the thing is that as a whole, Alcoholics Anonymous is well respected worldwide. It has a wonderful solution for alcoholism, and I'm not using a frothy emotional appeal. That's a term in the book. I'm not whipping up some verbose stuff here. The fact is AA works for a disease that is really a hopeless illness, but only seemingly hopeless, perhaps only in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis. So I'm extremely grateful to be here tonight. Alcoholics Anonymous is also probably the first to say they don't claim a corner on the market of recovery. If you do not find what you want here, you're welcome to go out there, you know. Try other things. I've done it. But I think of those things, and I'm glad to be here. There's somebody that I think of and I've talked about recently. It's a guy named Tim Treadwell. I don't know if you know who he is. He's not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's the subject of a documentary called Grizzly Man, and I watched it because I'm very interested in grizzly bears. But in the midst of this film, something really got my attention. This guy was very unhappy. He was an actor in L.A. His life didn't work out. And he went to kind of find himself in the wilderness in Alaska, and he went to this reserve where these grizzly bears were, and they were being poached upon, I guess is the proper expression, unless that's an egg, but you know what I'm saying. And here's what he said, and this is what got my attention. He said that he was unable to stop drinking. He said, "I couldn't stop drinking." And I don't know about you, but when I hear somebody say that, perhaps not in the context of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm talking to a newcomer, but when I happen to hear somebody say that, right away I want to know, what'd you do? Because, you know, I couldn't stop drinking either. So what did Tim do? And what he did is he thought that if he stayed there at this reserve, if he left civilization, if he gave up his aspirations, because he was so desperate about his drinking, because he couldn't stop drinking, if he went and he tried to protect these animals from poachers, maybe somehow that would get turned around for him, you know, and he would be able to stop drinking. And by God, that's exactly what happened. And he says, I was able to stop drinking by dedicating my life to this. He said, I'm willing to die for this. It was a miracle. It was a miracle. And, you know, if you're sitting here tonight like me, you couldn't stop drinking, I goddamn well know what he means. It's a miracle that I'm not drinking, that I'm talking to you, that I'm hopefully making some kind of sense, you know. And what happened, unfortunately, this guy would do videos of these animals, and one day he was videotaping them, you know, and one of them turned on him and ate him alive, the video running and everything. And so here's what I think. You know, I think of somebody like Tim Treadwell, and I don't need to make light of this subject, but if you're not having a good time in AA, I'll tell you, it'll never get as bad as your higher power turning around and eating you alive. It just ain't getting there, you know. Will not happen. So God bless him. You know, he didn't find what we find in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, down in Los Angeles, where I'm from, some people call people like Tim scouts. They say they go out there, you know, and they go out and see if there's something else that works better. And some of them come back. And basically, I've never seen one of them come back without an arrow through his head, you know? It's just there's nothing out there that can help me, that is of interest to me. The longer I've been in AA, and I'm sorry for those people who are scouts, there's some of you in the room tonight, I just don't want it to be me. I respect Alcoholics Anonymous, absolutely, and I also have great respect for alcoholism. It kills more people than I care to know. It's killed people that I've loved. Perhaps there's somebody that's struggling and you're here tonight as a family member. And you know, Al-Anon is another part of this program because alcoholism is a family illness. And my purpose is to tell you what I used to be like, what happened to me, what I'm like now. And we say in AA that some of us made a decision based on self that put us in a position to be hurt. And I did that a long, long time ago. I was the kid, my family, I grew up in an alcoholic home, which is not why I'm alcoholic, but I think of this because I was on the other side of this thing. My father was the alcoholic, he said so I'm comfortable stating that. And I was the kid that would wait for my dad, and he would come home, miss the driveway, park on the lawn, and fall out of the car. And then he'd go and wake up the neighbors before he came to our house. And I used to watch this, and I would wonder why my father would do this, you know. The neighbors weren't good enough to be doing what they did with my dad. People put my father down. People called my father a loser. Now, you know, we were talking earlier also about the funny. I'm a very ambivalent person. I don't know if you think you are, but I am. I'm suicidal, but I'm afraid to die. That's one thing. And This thing with my dad, I used to watch my dad do this a lot of times, and I would wonder, why would he do it? You know, while he was over on the neighbor's porch, and they'd do this thing, you know, they'd turn the light on real quick, like when you have a raccoon in your garbage can, you try to scare him away. And sometimes he'd fall off the porch, you know, and then he'd come over to our house. And I would be listening to this whole thing go on, and I'd wonder why. Why would he do that? Why would he humiliate himself? Why would he lose everything he had and take us down with him, you know? Why? And he'd come over to our house, and nothing special, just do the stuff alcoholics do. You throw up on somebody, or you punch them, or I don't know, you know, nothing special. That's what we do. And I would wonder, why would he do that? And, you know, my dad, when he was sober, had a tough time, and he used to confide in me. We were like buddies. And so when he'd come over and he was drunk and he was doing this crazy stuff, like, hey, Dad, we were friends, remember? Remember earlier today before you started on the martinis, you know? And so I hated his alcoholism. I didn't know it was alcoholism, but I hated what he became when he drank. There was nothing about that that appealed to me, and I had made a vow I would never be like that. And the other thing I did, because people in my town, I grew up in a small town, people called my dad a loser, so I wanted no part of those people. That was mean, and that hurt me. And so I made this decision based on self, that I wouldn't be a part of that, that I would never be like my father, but then I had no place, you see. And it placed me in a position to be hurt. That's what the book said. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, we have steps. And what the steps did is they backed me out of these decisions I made. We have the third step. We make a decision. That's a different decision, to turn our will and life over to the care of God. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, what I knew, although it may not have been the lingo I used, is that self-reliance had failed me. I could not depend upon myself. I could not stop drinking. You know, this isn't natural. This just isn't something a person who's ever not been there will understand. When I watched this Tim Treadwell video, there were a couple people that said things about him, and I realized they said them because they don't know what it's like not to be able to stop drinking. One guy said he got what he deserved, and you know, people feel like that about a lot of us. They get fed up with us. We're problem people. People in our own family, you know, my family, my own father, who was an alcoholic, disowned me because of my behavior. And my behavior was aberrant. Eventually, whether I drank or was not drinking. I'm an alcoholic. Drinking is a symptom, but I had a serious problem with life. I could not make it, and I didn't know what to do. And I guess I didn't know who to ask. Maybe I never asked the right person, not until I came to AA. But my life was not going good. I mean, look at me. I'm like too tall to live. I was really... It's not right, you know. I was like 6 feet tall by the time I was 2 weeks old or something. I might be exaggerating, but it felt like that, okay? And when I was 5, I had an accident. And as a result of that accident, I got 9.5 fingers. And I know you sons of bitches all have 10, so that sucks. You know? And it's just how it felt. It just sucked. It was over before I started. And suicide became my hobby because, you know, it just didn't look like things were going to go good. If this is the trend, I don't want it. You know, I just don't want it. And I was bad at suicide. I would do stupid things. Let's see. I mean, I felt bad, okay, but like the time came, I took the pills, I waited for the end. No dose. It was a bit of a long wait, you know. And yeah. And people see it, don't they? They just see you just being a doofus. And I couldn't stand that. I just couldn't stand it. And so I didn't want to be like my father. I didn't want to be like myself. My parents looked like movie stars to me. They were great-looking people. But I felt like dirt about myself. I couldn't figure out why. Maybe I didn't even try. But what I did, because I'm a defiant type of person, and there are certain traits that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, they're in the book. And if you're new, I hope you get the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you why it interested me. I am a loser. I eventually retreated into the bathroom of high school. The door locks from the inside, I'd like to mention that. And I intended to stay there. Because what I knew was this, by high school, that I could not be a part of. Those people were the people who would put my father down. And those kids walking down the hall were going to be the future doctors and lawyers and oil brokers and whatever the hell you were going to be. I don't want to be that, okay? And so I'm in the bathroom, and people tried to help me. They tried to help me out. A lot of people tried to help me. But here's the problem for me. Those people are probably better than me. That's what I feel. You know, there were therapists who tried to help me, and a priest tried to help me, and But there's this thing of identification in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is what has saved my life. And I don't know why exactly, but I mean, like this one lady was trying to help me out, and she said, what's the problem? Because I had this test and I couldn't face this test. So I thought, let me go for it here. And I tried to tell her the truth. And so I said, I'm terrified. And here's the problem. I bet you would understand that. But this lady couldn't get there with me. And she said, are you really terrified? You know, she started trying to quantify it. And here's what happened to me. I looked at this lady and I thought, okay, lady, let's get the word that works for you. So you can put it down in your little goddamn report, okay? So that we can get done here and go home. Because I'm finished. Because I get it, you don't understand. I'm still gonna feel the way I feel. But at least we can make you happy, lady. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of where I would get to. What those people offered me, what everybody offered me until I came to AA was sobriety, I guess. But it wasn't a life I wanted. I hadn't even started drinking yet. I don't want it. Those are the people that turned my old man down. Those are the people that broke his heart, break my heart. You know, it says in the big book that children from alcoholic homes are pathetically cynical. And I was one of those kids. And I came into AA, and I thought that was like my loophole. Did you have one? I had that, you know, like. And you said to me, here's the deal, Sia. It's a reason. It's not an excuse. Stuff happened to all of us out there. Alcoholics, we're a mess. But you said, that isn't an excuse to sit down, get up, and walk with us. We walk and we're sober together. And you said you're responsible because you recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. See, I was struck sober. I didn't wise up. If you're here and you're able to stop drinking by wising up, I don't know what you're doing here. I don't know. It's Saturday night, pal, you know. I got better stuff to do. But see, AA has this thing that I couldn't find. I was looking for it. You know, I waited a long time for Santa to come. And when he doesn't come, you just don't believe anymore. I didn't believe anymore. And nobody was getting next to that. And so there I am in that bathroom stall. And I left. You know, we leave. First of all, we're alcoholics. We take geographics. You think I'm hanging out in a bathroom stall? Forget it. I left, but I never left. Do you know what I mean? Because the problem centers in the mind. And because my life was over. And you couldn't help me. And I didn't know how to ask the right questions. I don't know, you know. And I started drinking when I was 18. It's a simple thing. Had a beer. Somebody'd actually have a beer with me. I went to Grandma's, was the place. It was this beer joint in Billings, Montana, where I grew up. And just had a drink like everybody else. No big deal. Didn't look like a martini. I was really scared of martinis because that's how my dad would start. Looked fine, you know, and then it was all over. And he's like over at the neighbor's house, falling off the porch. So I had a beer, and who would think that would take me anywhere bad? But see, I had this thing happen for me. In Alcoholics Anonymous, it's called the effect produced. And I guess what it did for me is it just made me feel okay. I didn't know I didn't feel okay. I mean, I knew I didn't feel okay, but I didn't know I didn't feel okay like you felt okay. I don't know. I had this drink, and it was just like it was okay. Somebody gave me permission to live. And the 6 feet and the 9.5 fingers, and all that stuff I worried about, the bathroom stall, it was a wash. It was okay. I just didn't care. It was a wonderful feeling. And so I drank as often as I possibly could. And by the time I was 19, I believe that I crossed the invisible line somewhere between 18 and 19. I moved with my family down to California. My parents separated. And my mother took the kids, and we came to California. And, you know, my mom had to ask me to leave. Now, I don't know if you're new here tonight and you think, like I did, that nobody loved me. I had a spiritual bankruptcy from the gate. A drink helped me out. Drinking helps me. Drink is like suicide prevention for me, and I'm glad I found it, you know. And the thing was that I didn't think people loved me because I couldn't feel loved, and I never understood that. And it really took coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and becoming useful, because I'm a suspicious person, and I started doing little stuff here. Like you said, why don't you take the coffee commitment? And I remember one day I wanted to kill myself. And you said to me, because I like to want to kill myself. It's one of my favorite things, you know. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous because you can speak honestly here. And I found when I would talk honestly about that feeling, or thought I was talking honestly about that feeling, or need to say it, people would get kind of excited out there. I mean, they'd say stuff like, you know, I got to write that down, Sia. And you can't say that. I have to call somebody. So I ain't going to talk about it. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you said to me, you know, you're going to get as well as the pro... You're only going to stay as sick as the secrets you keep. And I started letting you get a look at me. And so I'm suicidal, and sometimes I just got to say it to turn the page. I don't know. It's just part of my nature. And came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I tried that. I'm going to kill myself. But see, we got experts here. These are people of experience is what I mean. My sponsor is suicidal. My first sponsor was suicidal. These people have found a way up and out. It's not something on the wall. It's not in the book. It's a program of depth and weight. It means they've done it. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Okay, and so I want to kill myself, and my sponsor would say, you can't kill yourself. Who will serve the coffee? You know? I didn't have an answer for that. And here's the thing, really, that it said to me, that I have a place here. And if you're somebody like me, that I don't feel like I got a place anywhere, that for some reason I got no right, I got a right to be here. I satisfy the requirement for membership. I have a desire to stop drinking. And I get to be of service here. You gave me a place here. You told me this is a program of principles, but personalities. You know, one of the problems I brought into AA is people got to know me, they didn't like me anymore. And that's because I did things that weren't very pleasant. I'm starting with Girl Scouts. I did something funny with the cookie money, and so they asked me to leave, you know? And I mean, I didn't know. I didn't have a sponsor when I was seven who would have said to me, this is a pattern you're establishing for the rest of your life, okay? You have to make amends to Girl Scouts right now. You know, I didn't have that. And so as people got to know me, they didn't like me anymore. And that was one of the fears I brought into AA. And that was this attitude I had, why bother? You know, because it's going to be over before, it's not going to work out. So I'm not going to try. And this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I mentioned earlier, the reason I like this book, see, is it's written by losers, people like me. And the thing about these losers is they're not the cops. And they're not my parents, and they're not my boyfriend, they're not the priests, they're not the professionals. It's people who drank like me, people who did bad things that they probably didn't mean to do, because I did bad things I didn't mean to do. I did bad things I didn't even know I did, you know. And these people have found a way up and out. They found a program. They shared it with me. They're talking from the grave, the people in this book. You know, they found a manner of living that I also can grasp and develop. And that means everything to me. And that's why I like this book. It's not a theory. We live it around here. And I watched you. And that was the only way I believed it. You said do a commitment. Well, I saw you pouring the coffee. So, okay, I'm going to do it too. And the impetus for that was I did not want to drink anymore. I didn't want to drink anymore. And I would drink. And no matter when I said I didn't want to drink anymore, eventually I'd drink. And I didn't know how that was happening to me. But I didn't want it to happen to me. And I needed some help with that. And you were able not to drink. So, you know, I want what you had. And I started drinking when I was 18. By 19, as I mentioned, my mom asked me to leave. And there were a couple things that happened. Probably she felt like her life was over. I was not good at noticing other people and their difficulties. And my mom was living in this little house now in Palm Springs with these kids, and I was the problem person. You know, our literature says the alcoholic is unlovely in their cups, and I was. I did a couple of things, and I guess this is, I never really asked my mom why she asked me to leave, but I have my suspicions. There was this request in the newspaper, I guess, for counselors for a Colorado River trip. And I was very interested in this. And the reason I was interested in this was because I was new in town, and I needed to hook up. I wasn't interested in being of service for the Colorado River trip. I was interested in these things called male camp counselors, basically, you know. And so I signed up to go away, and I drank and partied for 3 days and got sunburned practically to death. And then it was time to go. You know that time to go feeling? Whether it's time to go or not, it was time for me to go. And so I split. And I called my mom to pick me up, and I probably should have been hospitalized. I was so badly sunburned. And my mom hung up on me, which was absolutely terrible. See, that's my side of things. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you presented this picture a little differently. You said, how about this, Sia? Who's the person you put on all those ridiculous forms, person to contact in case of emergency? Always my mom. I never thought about that. You know, my mom lived probably in a low-grade state of terror or concern, because, you know, people would call her or the police would call her, because the job would call and say, she's been gone for 3 days, is she with you? Or my mom would call the police, and then people who I hung out with would have to show up and give a description. My favorite one was, she's a tall, skinny thing with buck teeth and scraggly hair, officer. And so, you know, that was tough on my mom, and I didn't think about that. The other problem was that there was a little girl I was supposed to be looking after as a camp counselor, and she disappeared. That didn't really interest me, but see, her mother felt a little differently about it than that. And so mostly wherever I went, something like that would go awry. Something would go awry. Where I seemed to go, things ended up differently, worse off than when I showed up at first. And so my mom suggested perhaps I would like to move up to L.A. And that's how my mom asked me to move on, you know. And it wasn't until I got sober that I actually got that. And I came up to Los Angeles, and I don't know, I just started. I thought I would do better than anybody if I ever could get away from my parents. Did you ever do that? I'll never be like them. Wait until I'm out there, you know. I'll show everybody. And I fell flat on my face. And first of all, when I went up to L.A., I have no intention of being self-supporting through my own contributions. That is not my job, okay? And I called a married friend of my father's, and he had apartment buildings in L.A., and he moved me into an apartment. And then I moved the boyfriend of my choice in behind his back, and I kind of went on like that with my life. And I guess that was the life I was willing to accept, so that I could do things that I wanted to do and not be responsible the way I guess people normally are responsible. And I finally ended up getting sober in London, Hind Street, the noon meeting. I showed up there. And if you're new here, I have actually had two sobrieties in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is not my fault. It's actually my first sponsor's fault. And it's an anonymous program, but I don't mind telling you who it was. It was me. I was my first sponsor. That's true. That's true. And we say in AA that if you got yourself for a sponsor, you got an idiot for a sponsor. But I know everything. You know, that's how I guess I got by. I know everything. Just ask me. And like, I didn't really feel I had to read the book once I kind of got acquainted with the program, because people said this is an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. Indeed, that is what we say. But my spin on it was, yeah, I got that, you know, because I knew when I drank I would develop an allergy for the man at the moment in my life and an obsession for yours, you know. So I don't have to read that book. It applies. It applies. Get out of my face, you know. But I showed up at this meeting at Hind Street because I lost my job. I lost my job from drinking, but I did not really want to admit that to myself, because I did not know what to do about that, because I had tried numerous times to stop drinking, and when you try and you try and you can't do it, I just didn't want to think about it anymore. And I showed up at this meeting because a woman who was in Alcoholics Anonymous was someone I complained to, and she suggested that I come here. And you greeted me at the door. I was very nervous, you know, and went into the meeting, and I thought you'd been mean to me at the door because you asked me if I had a drinking problem, and I wouldn't admit that I did. And then you said, well, we have this singleness of purpose, and the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, so you're a visitor because you don't want to stop drinking, right? And then I was like, I'll kill you. And I mean, I had a baseball cap on. I pulled it down to, like, my upper lip, I think. And I thought you didn't really want me to come or something. That isn't what you said to me, but I'm easily deluded. And if you don't want me around, if I think that, you're like the only game in town. Man, I'm coming. You know, so I went in that meeting, and I was very uncomfortable, and I was kind of mad. And, you know, an interesting thing happened in spite of that. There's this thing in the book that I identify with where Bill Wilson is talking about Ebby coming over and talking to him. He doesn't mention Ebby by name, but he mentions a friend that, an alcoholic, and he can't wait for the guy to come over. He's fantasizing about the time they, what they do, charter a jet, blah, 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 you know. And the guy shows up, and he was sober. And Bill says that he was shocked, but he was interested. And he said he was interested. He had to be interested because he was hopeless. And I sat in that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was kind of like that too. I felt like you roughed me up at the door. But when you started to talk about what's going on here, I got interested because I felt so goddamn terrible about myself. And you reached me. And how you reached me is you talked about your drinking. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for doing that. People talked about their drinking. People said, my first drink was a beer, and I didn't expect it to take me to, you know, wherever it took them. I didn't expect it to take me to the places it took me. So I was right there with you. And they didn't ask me about my drinking after that little meeting at the door. And so I relaxed. I'm a person who is defensive and guarded. That's some of the nature of the alcoholic, you know. And I relaxed, and I guess that's why I identified. That's what I did, the whole thing the book's predicated on. I identified with you. I realized when I drank that I started in one place and would end up in another. And it isn't where I wanted to end up, which is how I my whole life was going. You know, it didn't happen every time, but it was really the rule. It wasn't the exception, and that's what I tried to tell myself. I tried to say it was, you know, accidental or coincidental or incidental. You know how we rationalize this, or that's what I did. And as I listened to your drinking, and as I listened to what was going on for you, I thought that's what goes on for me. When I drink, I get in a place worse off financially, physically, I don't know, emotionally, just worse off, you know, it all added up to that. And so you ruined my drinking. You made me see where it took you, and that's where I was going. And then the other thing that you did for me in that meeting is people talked honestly about their feelings. You know, I'm like, ha, 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 a little about suicide and stuff, but I felt terrible. And I felt humiliated about feeling terrible, because I'm a smart guy, and I didn't know what had happened to me, and I was not going to end up like my parents, like my father, and I was like my father. And what are you supposed to do about that? You know, I want to start over, or I want my lifeline or whatever. I didn't know what to do. And I sat in that meeting and people talked honestly about their feelings. You know, I think I was emotionally illiterate by the time I sat down there. And I listened to these people, and this one woman in particular struck me. I don't know why. It's just it did. It's just I identified. She had this new job, and she was like scared on this new job. And she had this way of expressing herself that I realized it was a penny ante deal for her too, that I gave my life away for 3 days on the Colorado River. For Christ's sake, couldn't I have picked a week in Paris at Mac? No. You know, that I gave it away for nothing. One time I killed myself because I had a car accident, and it was $300 for this guy's car I was driving, and I didn't have it, so I'm out of here. You know, that's my self-worth. $300. I hope I never forget that. And I sat in this meeting, and this lady felt bad like that. And she like would rather die than ask where the pencil sharpener was. And I thought, that's how I live and breathe, man. I cannot ask that question. I just can't do it, and I don't know why. It's not something I can figure out. There's no logic to it, you know. And here was a simple deal for me that made me want to come back to AA. That lady felt like me. And when I felt like that, I needed a drink. And that lady wasn't drinking. How come? How come? How come she could hang in there? How come she didn't have to do that? And so I wanted what you had, you know. And I started coming back to AA to figure it out, I guess. And, you know, I could stand the 100 people in the big book. I just thought the rest of you sucked. Because you always had something to tell me to do, you know. And I wasn't really ready to hear it. I thought that I wanted what you had. But apparently I wanted it in my own special way. And let me give you a couple of examples. The old timers talk about this. You know, I couldn't stop drinking, and I wasn't drinking. I was struck sober by a God. I don't know what it is. He, she, it, AA doesn't claim to know either. It just says, you know, it's got to be there. Find something, you know, and because God couldn't would have sought, and because no human power could. So that's kind of a problem, you know, I sat in those meetings, and the old timers say, if you're sober and you don't use the program, you'll go nuts. Your solutions will be worse than your problems. And I'm really a textbook example of that. I had a few problems, which I wasn't particularly aware of until I stopped drinking. And then my life started to kind of catch up with me like a bad ebb tide or something. I was living illegally in England, and I had a real good reason for that. I bet you'd be on my side if I told you, because we're good at that, you know. But the problem is that I'm not drinking now. And see, when I drank, it took the pressure away. I had that pressure all my life that I mentioned to you. And when that pressure would bother me, I'd have a drink and I'd be okay. And then that pressure would come and I would drink. And I started to feel that pressure. And in retrospect, what I think it is I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to these meetings, and they talk about uncomfortable things here if you're not doing the do. They talk about an honest program. They talk about a rigorous program. They talk about a searching and fearless moral inventory. What the hell is that? They talk about doing somebody said, you know what, they don't want your money, they want their money. And I realized you expected me to pay people back. And I had been a thief all of my life. I didn't even realize until I worked the steps that it was more than the things. I was a thief my whole life. But it wasn't just the stuff I took. You know, I took the smile off people's faces, their nice day, maybe their trust in others. I did those things, and I sat in those meetings not aware of that, but getting more and more uncomfortable. And I thought the problem was I was living illegally in England. I need to do something about that, you know? And then I realized, well, my God, this is easy. Just marry somebody, for Christ's sake, you know? And takes care of the problem. And I found somebody who had no problem at all helping me out either. And we got married, and I must have gone running into that meeting because I couldn't wait to... I don't know, I guess I wanted to tell you to shove it up your big book or something. I kind of wanted AA to be wrong. I wanted AA to be wrong about the part where you have to change. I just want to stop drinking, okay? And I want it to stay stopped, okay? And my impression in being in AA now is I have to change because I'm an alcoholic and I cannot live with the discomfort and the guilt and, you know, I have to work the steps. And but no, I couldn't quite believe that at this time. Anyway, so I married this guy and I rushed to the meeting because I'm going to tell you, I don't know what I was going to tell you. I never got the chance because sitting in the meeting, this bad thing happened. And what happened is I suddenly remembered I was already married to this guy in Los Angeles. And I felt bad. I know, that's kind of hard to believe, right? It's like 1-2. Can you count? And that made me feel terrible. It made me feel extremely crazy. That's really hard to miss. I don't know, you know. And what is that saying? I must have dozed off. I don't know. But anyway, I didn't know what to do about that. And I really didn't want to ask you because I didn't want to, well, you know, you don't want to show your hand, right? And so that was a bad thing that happened to me. And then we, you know, we look for a higher power here. And I guess I thought the cutest newcomer in the room would do the job nicely. And I hooked up with this guy, and he drank. And then I thought that was a 12-step call I should make. And you see, that's not how it works in AA, but I'm running my own program here. And I went over to his house, and he'd been drinking. And he opened the door, and he punched me right in the face. And I told you the way I am, if I think you don't want me around, that was a pretty clear clue. If I think you don't want me around, it's like instant obsession of the mind. You would have thought that guy proposed to me and gave me a dozen roses. I started, like, stalking him through the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I just wanted a word. And people were starting to get sick of me. Like, this one lady said to me, because I talked a lot, a lot. I was a very important topic in my own mind. And I remember this lady said to me, you know, shut up, Sia. You're an alcoholic, right? So go in the meeting, because you know what you are? You're a liar, a cheat, a thief, and a whore. And in the meeting, you'll be sitting between liars and cheats, behind thieves, and in front of other whores. You never have to be alone again, you know? Jeez. Yeah, what a bitch, right? And she probably just, like, wanted to drink her coffee. But, so, you know, people didn't like, they said, maybe you're too sick for this program. And, you know, I've seen that look. I don't care if this is Alcoholics Anonymous or not. I've seen that look, and you were looking at me that way. That look where, I don't know, maybe you're laying on the ground and they're looking down at you, or you're, I've just seen that look. And so it's time to go, because that's my reaction to that look. It's time to go, I get it. I take geographics, it's fine, it's time, I'm way overdue. And so I find this guy to save me, and we go to Gatwick Airport, and he buys the tickets. And then this funny thing happened. And when I look back at my life, there have been times when I wondered why the cars didn't connect head on, or why that guy who came to my door with a shotgun went away. And I had a moment like that, which I didn't really add up until a little while later in sobriety. And what happened is this guy was arrested right in front of me. He was handcuffed. He was taken away. He apparently was a felon, and he was fleeing the country, and I was really just part of the cover. Now I thought he liked me, so that hurt my feelings, you know. But what was worse is that I didn't know what to do. That was my last brilliant idea. I didn't know what to do. And if you're new and you have a really great idea, don't be selfish, you know, share it, because it might kill you. And I went home, is what I did, and I smoked a joint. And, you know, marijuana was not my thing. I remember I was confused for about half an hour, and I ate a hell of a lot of potato chips, and that was it. And then I got nothing with a hole in it, you know, and I don't know what to do. And there's that saying in the book that we become as open-minded as the dying, and I've had that moment a couple times in sobriety. I would say I had that moment that day because I could see where I was going. You know, I was going there, and I came to AA, and I thought that I made a detour. And all that happened is I'd been struck sober, yeah, but I still had this terrible ism. You know, I was losing my mind, and I didn't know what to do. I did not think of a drink once, and that's not because I'm a brilliant person. I believe that God removed that desire from me, that that's the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what do I do with it? And a really odd thing happened that day. And what happened is I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't really know why I would do that. You were not glad to see me. And I don't know about you, but I kind of live and die whether people like me or not. I have to work my program on that. We talk about being people pleasers here. That's a nice term for being a liar. You know, I'll just about do anything to get you to like me unless I work the steps. And I went to that meeting, and I didn't think those people liked me. And a remarkable thing happened, and it felt like a bad thing that day. I don't know how your program has been, but some days have been the making of me, and they felt like the worst day of my life, and that was one of them. Because I went in that meeting, and you know, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life, and I do. And I had this facade, I thought. Nobody else was fooled by me, but me probably, but you know, that was what I had left, and it fell apart. I couldn't hold that up one more second, and I started to fall apart right in the meeting, you know. It was not attractive either. Some people probably cry cute. Not me, man. I was snotting and crying, and I was horrible. And this person took me aside so the meeting wouldn't be disrupted. And they did this real simple thing that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. The very simple thing. There's no gurney. There's no flashing lights. It's not fancy. They simply said to me, "What's going on, Sia?" And, you know, I really didn't know. I didn't know what was wrong. I always had an answer. And I was so quick with the answer, I believed it myself, but I had no answer this day. And when I wound down, what they did is they wrote a phone number down for me, and they said, "You know, Sia, if you got 6 months of your life to give, work this program, but work it as Bill sees it. You know, not as you see it." And they weren't trying to be a wise guy. And they gave me that number, and they walked away. And I guess I would say I'm standing at the turning point then, right? It's that thing in the book that says, and we're going to ask God's protection and care with complete abandon, or we ain't. And I have stood with people in that moment, in my opinion. The people who you give them that number and you ask them if they're going to call, and they say, "I can't." And most of us here know that's a goddamn lie. That's the wrong verb. It's that you won't. And what the odd thing about alcoholism is, and what the amazing thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is literally, if you dial the phone, you can save your life. You don't even have to know what you're going to say. You don't even have to say anything. You can be incoherent. You can be sobbing. I have been there. And yet, if you will do the simple, the least thing that you can do, just sitting in this meeting, if you can't stand it, if you hope I never come to Portland again and show up at this meeting, that is okay, see? Because here's the thing. This is a program of principles above personalities. They don't care who you are, the steps. I'm here because you invited me. I have been taught to say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. And nobody can defeat the alcoholic. Nobody can cheat the alcoholic out of their recovery, but the alcoholic. We're such the wily adversary, aren't we? And so the thing is that you're here, and I'm here. And you don't have to like me. That's not how you're going to make it in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an action program. And so I dialed that phone, you know. I called. And the person on the other end of the phone said to me, "You know, do you want to clean up your act?" You know, I didn't really even know what that meant. But I wasn't willing to try to get out of Dodge one more time. I didn't know where Dodge would lead to anymore, and I didn't want to go there, you know. And I heard your stories, and I had a relatively high bottom, and I don't want to go there. This is bad enough. It's terrible. It's terrible because I don't know what to do anymore. And so I started over in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I think of people when I speak at meetings. Why aren't they here? You know, why isn't Michael speaking here? My Friday night Brentwood meeting, there was this newcomer guy, Michael, and I loved him because he was new like me. He knew everything. He had more teeth in his head, you know, and he was fine. Just ask him. And I always ask, "I'm fine, you know, no, I don't need anything. It's fine. And how much time you got?" "I got another week," and didn't work with anybody. And one week, I guess he was so great that he went over to this Holiday Inn on the 405 by where I live. He got a room on the 8th floor. he blew his sobriety and then he jumped out the window. So Michael won't be here again, you know. And I think about people like Michael and I wonder, how come? How come I'm here? How come you're here? How come he's not? I bet you can mention somebody yourself. What am I doing here when he's not? Am I smarter than him? Does God like me more than him? You have a worse bottom than him, you know? I don't really know what it is. I don't really know what it is, you know? I don't want to ever know what it is because I'm dependent on this higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. The stuff I do, you've taught me to do, and I do it in spades. You know, I got a lot of safety nets between me and that door if you're new. But there's this weird X factor with alcoholism. And if you think you have a drinking problem and you're here tonight, if you feel any willingness, which in my case always looked like goddamn fear, act on it, you know. That's what I did. And I have people I sponsor because of that. And they expect to see me at the meeting. And I have a sponsor and I have commitments. And I'm expected to do those commitments. You know, I'm willing to do those commitments because I recognize the debt. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And the people who are here were here to tell me how to work it based on their experience. It wasn't something on a wall or something out of a book or a picture. They showed me. And I'm the kind of person I need that demonstration. It was a demonstration of faith. You showed me how to live. And I think about Michael and for all those people, you know, here I am. If there's something I say to you that helps you want to be in this program, I'm goddamn grateful for that. You bet. I'll fly up here to Portland. I'll go anywhere, you know, because you've taught me that. And let me be honest with you, there's times I don't feel like it. Like when Riverside calls. Do you know how far Riverside is from LA down there? And I think about it before I call them back, you know? And you know what it gets down to? It's like, let me see, Riverside or death? And you know what? That is what the choice is. You dial the phone, you call Riverside, and you show up. And most of the time it's great. But you know, I crept in here from the campfire. Maybe you came from further away. And I've trenched in here. And so I got my stuff to do here. And if I don't feel like doing it, okay, I call another alcoholic. If my leg hurts on Sunday and I don't want to go to my home group, I'm going to call my sponsor and explain to her why I don't want to do that. And I got to get somebody to cover my commitment, you know. And so, like, instead of getting on a bus to Arizona, it's just like goddamn easier, just go to the meeting and do my commitment, you know. And I have a simple program because you told me, keep a simple program. You know, I'm a fancy-footed person, and I had nothing with a hole in it when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a lot today. Let me tell you what I got today, because it's what I want. And I didn't know I wanted it, if you're new. I thought I wanted money, property, and prestige, because I needed to feel good about myself. And I thought I would feel good about myself if other people were impressed with me. And that was part of my spiritual bankruptcy. So perhaps the things that I have today are not of interest to you, but I have changed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know I have changed in Alcoholics Anonymous because people don't walk the other way now. You invited me back here. I hope I never get used to that. I'm invited back to places. That is a new thing, you know. And some of the things I got when I started my sobriety over is, I mentioned I got my family back. And I didn't want them, and I mean that. You know, I hated my parents. I disliked them, and I believe I can safely say I hated their guts. My father's drinking took a lot out of my life. That was my point of view, and I was sticking to it. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous said to me, okay, Sia, but you're an alcoholic, and we're not holding it against you. So start working the program, because here's the problem. That's called resentment, and they made me look it up, because I know everything, you know. And the thing is, the book says that will cut me off from the sunlight of the Spirit and I'll drink again. I didn't really know what that meant about the sunlight of the Spirit. You don't have to know what the stuff means. But if you feel bad enough, you're just going to move ahead. And I did not want to drink again, you know. And somebody said, an old timer said, you know, you're not that busy, Sia. I didn't have a job yet. They said, maybe you missed something in the book. Why don't you reread it? And I was reading a little bit of that book each night. And I don't know, somewhere along the line, it doesn't even matter what page, I had this spiritual change. This shift. And I suddenly saw my dad so differently. It was the weirdest thing. I suddenly saw my dad had a monkey on his back, just like me. And I had done my fourth step here and my fifth step here. My fourth step was like 168 pages long. Hated everybody I ever met and remembered you all, you know. But I got to look at myself, you know, and I had some wonderful things from that, some release from the fact that I knew practically every man that I ever met biblically. That was a little tough to deal with. And you know, when I was doing my inventory, I suddenly realized, you know, I thought lust was my defect of character. That's why it's nice to have a sponsor, because my sponsor said, I don't think so, Sia. And I realized where she was getting to. You know why I felt like that? Because I was goddamn lonely. You know why I did that? Because I was goddamn lonely. I would have been with anybody. I don't care if you beat the shit out of me. Pardon my language. I just, I don't want to be here, okay? How do you get out of that? And that's what a drink did for me. I'm not drinking now, so how am I going to get out of that? That spiritual claustrophobia, that my skin is crawling. I can't take enough showers. And I did this inventory with this lady. And so when I had this moment with my father, I realized he meant to be a good guy too. You know, I didn't mean to use abortion for birth control. Well, maybe my dad didn't mean to miss all my little track meets and all that stuff. And I just had that moment and I realized that he meant to be a good person too. You know, and that he had a monkey on his back, as I said. And I just had this moment of compassion for my dad. Bill says we're all people suffering from the pangs of growing up. And so there's a guy, Cubby. Cubby has passed on, but he used to say that the most sacred ground is where an ancient hatred is turned into a current love. And that happened for me with my dad. You guys did that for me by telling me, read that book, work this program. And I got to hold my dad's hand when he died 10 years ago. But before that happened, I got to have a friendship with my father. And he was this person I never knew he was. And that's because Alcoholics Anonymous healed that part of me, you know. And I hated my mother as well. My mom had a nervous breakdown when I was a kid, and she was a scary person to me. She used to scream a lot, and I thought, you know what, I'm never forgiving you. I thought she drove my dad away. She was crazy. I thought she was going to kill us. You know, you can give them all too, can't you? Like, you don't tell me I have to give this up. This was so wrong of this person. And so Alcoholics Anonymous said to me, you know, this is not, what is it? We're not on the debating society. Just get into action. And you told me take contrary action, because stuff had happened to you worse than happened to me. And you shared it openly with me. And so you told me to start sending my mom Mother's Day cards. You know, I wanted to send her Other's Day cards. That was my big idea. But okay, I did what you said, and I was counting them, because you're not going to put that over on me, you know, and I lost count somewhere. But one day I was helping my mom, and my point is this, that my mom, she started to cry, and she sat down and she told me that this thing happened to her when she was a kid. She went someplace and she was assaulted, and she tried to tell her mom about it, but like, her mom didn't believe her. And so I don't even know how many times that happened to my mom, but I was looking at my mom, and here's the thing. When I was a kid, something like that happened to me too. And I decided I would die before anybody knew that happened to me. And I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you said to me, as I mentioned earlier, Sia, you're going to stay as sick as the secrets you keep. And so one by one, I had divested myself of these terrible things I had done to others and things that had happened to me. And I didn't do it from a podium, if you're new. I'm just like, I don't care who knows anything about me now. I'm an open book, because what happened to me is I looked at my mother and I realized there's no Alcoholics Anonymous for my mom. I'm the big book for my mom, and that Alcoholics Anonymous had healed me. And my heart broke open for my mom, you know. And I got my whole family back, and I am in the center of my family. And whether they understand the fact that you stand behind me, and whether they understand the fact that I'm of service, and that's why they feel secure and they trust me, I know that. You gave me that life. You gave me that capability and those words and those. You shared that stuff with me. You shared unselfishly with me. There's a man in L.A. now, longtime member of AA, so beloved, and he's ill. He's very ill. And he talks about this guy jumping out of a plane in a parachute, and the parachute doesn't open, and he calls him on the radio, and he's so panic-stricken. And the other guy on the end of the radio says, well, enjoy your last ride, you know? And that's like, this guy is sharing his death with us. He's sharing his life with us. You know, it's the message of depth and weight, is it not? It's not some frothy emotional appeal. This person is talking about his own experience. And based upon that, I was able to cobble this life together. And I have been able to have a job. I'm unemployable, thank you very much. And I was proud of the fact of that. And you said, well, I got sober in the Pacific group, bunch of killers, you know. And they said to me, well, there's that saying, you know, I feel terrible, get a terrible job. And then they'd be like, ha, ha, ha. And I did. I got a terrible job. And like, I would show up there at 8 a.m., which was start time, and I wanted a goddamn standing ovation, you know what I mean? That was impossible. Nobody cared, you know, and I was dramatic when I was new, and it was like, geez, and then I'd call somebody because, like, it was time to go, at 10 o'clock, and I'd realize this is hopeless because they expected me to be there, like, I think till 5. Well, that ain't going to happen, you know what I mean? And so then I'd call somebody on the phone, and they'd say, okay, Sia, here's what you do. You go away from the regular people, and you go in the ladies' room, and you have your psychotic episode there, you know, just do it there, and it's okay. You can have it. You know, and I want to kill myself. They go, I understand. You know, and then we turn the page. Then I go in there and wash my face and try to come back. And my life was over, man. It was over. But here's the thing. That was my thinking. And you pointed out to me again and again that my self-reliance had failed me, or I never would have showed up here in the first place. And you guys were doing better than me. You liked your job, and you were, like, happy. And so you said, don't leave until the miracle happens. And so I would stay in that job. And what I have is a career today, and I'm very well respected in my office. And, you know, my sponsor told me I'd always be a few streets over from the parade. And that is true, you know. I'm an odd person. I am odd. They know I'm odd. They like me, though. They just don't quite get what the deal is. But we know, you know. And so I can work today. It's mine. I don't have to get some guy to do that for me. I never thought I could recover from that seemingly hopeless state of mind either. I just didn't see how that would happen, and Alcoholics Anonymous did that for me. And I got to get married in Alcoholics Anonymous as well, which was a remarkable thing. And you said it's like a closed meeting, you know, only the participants participate. And, like, go home. That's a good way to stay married and simple stuff like that. And I don't know, it's like funny. And I'll tell you something, that was a tough marriage. There was something fatally wrong with that marriage, and it was so hard. And, you know, I think we actually did put a marriage counselor out of business. I think we did. I think he couldn't take it. One day he just stood up and he said, I don't know what you're going to do, okay? But I just felt so sorry for him. Call your sponsor, you know what I'm going to say. But... So that marriage didn't work out. And you know, when my husband said that he wanted to file for divorce, we'd been like an AA couple. And we'd done the meeting where we were both the secretary of the meeting. And you know what? I didn't want to tell you that he was leaving me. But I went to the meeting and you had told me, you know, just be as honest. You're only as sick as your secrets. So that was my pride. And so I told you right away that he was leaving, and I didn't try to dress it up. And this lady walked up to me at the meeting, and she said, you know, when my husband said he was going to leave, I drank. And I thought, thanks, lady. That was exactly what I needed to hear. Because I don't know if you do this or not, but I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get a job, and I get a life. I'm like, I'm going to school now. And it's easy to forget that my primary purpose is not those things. It is wonderful to have friends here. It is wonderful to have a job. It is wonderful to have all the things I have, but my primary purpose is to stay sober and carry the message. That's all I got to do, and everything comes from that. And so that lady reminded me of that, and I buckled down, you know, and I got to go through that whole thing, and it was a difficult experience. But so what? What you taught me is I don't have a corner on the market of suffering. Neither do alcoholics. Lots of people get divorced, and you don't have to drink over it. If you're new here, whatever's going on with you, we've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and you can get through it sober. That's what I was told. You never have to drink again, no matter what. We'll help you. Call me. Call these people. This is a great AA meeting. And based upon that, you know, I moved through that. And then about 2 years ago, my ex-husband showed up at a meeting and we were bitter. You know, we worked our program, but it's a little bit of a choke chain on me when I saw him, you know what I mean? And he shows up at the meeting and he made an amends to me from the podium. He said a wonderful thing. He said, you know, there's things that I want to say to you, Sia, about how much I admire you. I don't think you know how much I admire you. It killed me because he was talking about my AA program. And subsequently, he got terminally ill. And he called me because he was dying. And he asked me to come and help him. And I was living with somebody else. And, you know, this guy that I live with said to me, Sia, he needs you. And he's dying. And you go there. That is Alcoholics Anonymous. That was so unselfish. And somebody in the meeting, I told him I was going. And I was scared, you know. I didn't want to see this. And they pressed $100 in my hand. They said, it's not the money, Sia. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. Take us. And so I went to help him. And I stayed with him for a week, and
You know, an amazing thing happened. The guy recovered.
Son of a bitch, right? And he's like one of my dearest friends today. It was like the marriage interfered with our friendship. I don't know, you know. But here's the thing, if you're new here. I don't know what's going on, okay? I don't have to know what's going on. I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I try to stay in the middle. I'm not an outlier. I tried that. You know, I was the one hiding in the bathroom. That didn't work that great for me. So you said, get in the middle. And I'm in the middle here, and I just walk along. Now, I protest sometimes, but I have a great sponsor. She spoke here last week. She's a tough customer when it gets to it, and I need that. I don't need a buddy when I'm trying to shortchange my program. And so my sponsor has been a help to me, and I was able to do this thing that was this remarkable thing for this person. And we ended up being friends. And if you told me that would happen when he walked up to me and said, I want a divorce, no way, Jose. But see, that's where the spiritual part of the program comes into play here. This is thy will, not mine. I think it ain't going to turn out. I think I'm never going to get over what happened to me as a kid with my father's drinking. I think I'm never going to forgive you what you did to me. I think I'm never going to be able to stop drinking. I think I can never hold a job. It's all over, you know. I wish it wasn't true, but it is true. And you know what? I was wrong. That was just my thinking. And see, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just a person here. But this meeting and Alcoholics Anonymous itself, it's the greater part. It's the sum of the parts. And you can be a part of this. And there will be somebody in this meeting that you'll be able to talk to if you want to, if you're new here. Or at least you can just get a phone number maybe. Or just come back here again next week. You know, I'm not begging you to do that. I'm just telling you there's an answer here. It's like that thing about the beggar who finds the bread. I've found the bread here, and I can show you where it is. I can't give it to you myself. This is a spiritual program, but you can find it. And the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous giving me this higher power is this. You know, I'm going to leave here. We're all going to go home, and something might happen because I'm an interesting person. I start thinking, and I don't know, something's wrong. You know what I mean? And the deal is this. You're going to go to sleep, and my sponsor's in L.A. You can't keep me sober. You could never stop me drinking. If you could stop me drinking, what the hell is it that we're doing here, right? There's a power greater than myself, wherever two or more are gathered, and that's why I need to go to meetings. But it's portable, and so I take it with me. And so those times when I ain't going to make it, those times when I go and take care of my dying ex-husband, or those times when I'm going somewhere to something that shouldn't frighten me and it terrifies me, I get to say it to my higher power until I get a chance to say it to you. And what has happened is I've been able to do these amazing things because I have a power greater than myself. And when I think it's over and I got to throw in the towel, you say to me, not if you can stand up. Can you get up, Sia? What's the smallest thing you can do to help yourself right now? How can you be of service to someone else? And I have been able to follow that anthem because there's something on the other side of it. And the something on the other side of it is an individual journey. But it starts with not taking a drink today. So if you're new here tonight, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you join us. Thank you.